Love bade me welcome, yet my soul drew back, begins George Herbert's poem, Love 3. It's one of the 26 poems that students at Wyoming Catholic College memorize over their 4 years, and one of the most beloved. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, and you're listening to the Wyoming Catholic College weekly podcast, The After Dinner Scholar. George Herbert, an Anglican clergyman, lived a mere 39 years, from 1593 to 1633. Yet the great Puritan pastor and theologian Richard Baxter said of him, quote, "Herbert speaks to God like one that really believeth in God, and whose business in the world is most with God. Heart work and heaven work make up his books," close quote. I asked Dr. Tiffany Schubert to tell us a little bit more about the poet and then the poem.
George Herbert was born in 1593 and died in 1633, so very, very short life. He was an Anglican priest, although he took a sort of brief detour into politics and into Parliament, into politics, and then becomes a priest in a small country parish. And apparently he was a very devoted priest, would go around to his sick parishioners and give them, administer communion to them, and just showed a real genuine love and care for those under his care.
And then he wrote poems.
That's right. Yes, he did. He's sort of in that great tradition of English divines who were also poets. So we could add someone like John Donne. So he writes a collection of poems. His poems are mostly religious poems.
Now, Love 3 implies that there's a Love 1 and a Love 2. And in fact, that goes back to his book of poetry called The Temple. What was the greater project he had in mind?
Love 1, 2, and 3 are part of a smaller group of poems within the temple called The Church. And it seems to be a sort of part of his thinking through the stages and progressions of the spiritual life, and the stages and the progressions in love in particular. So Love 1 and 2 are kind of contrasting, we could say maybe erotic love and divine love, and pointing out that erotic love gets all the attention and divine love doesn't get all of the poems written about it. And so with the love poems, he's casting himself for it as a love poet, but a love poet of the divine rather than a love poet of the erotic.
Will you recite Love 3 for us?
Love bade me welcome, yet my soul drew back, guilty of dust and sin. But quick-eyed love, observing me grow slack from my first entrance in, drew nearer to me, sweetly questioning if I lacked anything. A guest, I answered, worthy to be here. Love said, you shall be he. I, the unkind, ungrateful? Ah, my dear, I cannot look on thee. Love took my hand and smiling did reply, who made the eyes but I? Truth, Lord, but I have marred them. Let my shame go where it doth deserve. And know you not, says Love, who bore the blame? My dear, then I will serve. You must sit down, says Love, and taste my meat. So I did sit and eat.
The poem has the ring of a little drama, complete with some stage directions. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, that's one of the things that sets Love 3 apart from Love 1 and 2. So in Love 1 and 2, Herbert is directly addressing love. He's apostrophizing love. But here in Love 3, the culmination of this love sequence, it's actually a dialogue, a conversation between love. And then you're right, we get those delicate attentions to the positioning, right, of the speaker in love. Love draws near to me. Love took my hand and smiling did reply. Like we're in a kind of Shakespeare play.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about the action of the poem as it unfolds.
So we begin with a love in this poem personified. So love has the attributes of a person inviting the speaker in. And the speaker is hesitant. The speaker is holding himself back from, really from the hospitable welcome that love is giving him. So students and I talked about it. You're imagining that you're at a party or you're coming into someone's house and you have the gracious hostess who comes up to you, right, and says, come in, what can I get you? Oh, would you like to sit over here? Oh, can I, you know, would you like a drink? Right, with all of the high courtesy of the host or hostess. And our speaker is a profoundly reluctant guest. Right? He feels that he doesn't deserve to be here. So he's sort of holding himself back and saying, no, I'll just, first off, no, I can't come in. Or then, no, okay, just put me in the corner. Hide me away. He's resisting love's gracious hospitality.
Now, is that how he viewed the Christian life? Is this a poem about doubt and second guessing, or is it a poem about assurance or one aspect of the Christian life?
Yeah, so one of the goals of Herbert in his religious poetry in his collection, right, The Temple, is he's trying to show us different facets of the soul's relationship with God, different moments in the drama, really, of the individual and of God. And this is a moment, it's a moment on the cusp, right? It's a moment of, say, the soul perhaps entering, maybe you could say, fully into the church, fully into divine love, right? Fully being embraced, and yet, yeah, our speaker is experiencing kind of doubt, perhaps not doubt in love's existence, but doubt in his own worthiness to be here. That's precisely where the speaker is. He says, I am not worthy to be here.
That's a very Puritan notion of conversion. You know, that was the image, that you would feel so unworthy and so beaten down by your sinfulness, followed by this moment of divine joy coming into your heart.
Yeah, and one of the wonderful things about the poem is that love is having none of it. Right? Love does not accept the speaker's, you could say, right, maybe puritanical groveling or self-accusation, right? No, not me, I'm a worm. Love doesn't contradict the speaker, doesn't say, oh no, you are the most wonderful thing that God has ever seen. But love sort of brushes it all aside and says, you know, Fred, yes, I know that, but I've taken care of it. And still, I want you to come in. So it's sort of the speaker might be in that kind of puritanical place, but love himself is coming in with this, right, incredible offer of grace.
There were a couple of lines that I thought were rather ambiguous in their tone. Asked if I lacked anything, what could anything possibly be? And the other was, it says, you shall be he. Shall be in what sense? Shall be in the future? Shall be now? Or I name you that person? Are those ambiguous or am I being ambiguous?
No, I think that's right. The lacked anything there seems to have both, I think, a spiritual connotation and a sort of guest host connotation. It seems a very typical or common thing for a host to come up to a guest and say, is there anything that you lack that you don't have? Right? But essentially, right, can I get you anything? Mm-hmm. But of course, we're in a poem in which the guest host relationship is put into a spiritual context, right, into a spiritual relationship. And so the anything there seems to also be a question of the speaker's spiritual lack too. What does the speaker not have? Does he lack anything? I suppose maybe one of the surprising things about the poem is that the speaker thinks that he lacks, well, everything. But love is here to offer in return than everything. And then the question of, yeah, you shall be he, is a question of, Is that a in the moment declaration? Love is saying, yes, you shall be he, right? So it's in the answer, the speaker says, an answer to Love's question, like, do you lack anything? The speaker says, a guest worthy to be here. He's there transforming this spiritual lack into the language of hospitality. So it's I don't deserve to be here spiritually, but he puts it as, I'm not the right guest at all. And Love looks at him and says, you shall be this. You shall be the guest. Yeah, I don't think there is there's some ambiguity about whether or not that moment of declaration is making our speaker into the guest, or this is a future speaking, the opportunity to make the speaker, I should say, right, into the guest that is worthy. And in fact, actually, maybe what we're seeing in the poem is the speaker becoming the guest who's worthy to be there. So this is, in fact, actually, it's a dramatization of that transformation, right, in the moment of the poem itself.
Now, well, Herbert was an Anglican, and I believe an Anglican with Puritan leanings, which is not a bad thing, but he's not a Catholic. Was this nevertheless a very sacramental poem? Should we see this as something of a meditation on the Eucharist?
Oh, very much so. So the poem ends with this declaration, right, from Love saying, right, you must sit down and eat my meat. So I did sit and eat, is what is the speaker's response. And there, the meat seems to be putting this, again, guest-host relationship into, it's a very broad scriptural allusion. You have so many feasts in Scripture. You have the Feast of the Lamb, and then you have the feasts in Christ's parables. And then, of course, you have the Eucharist as a kind of ultimate feast. But I wouldn't want to limit that image of festivity only to the Eucharist, but I certainly think that those resonances are there. And that Herbert is a very sacramental poet. Like I said, all the poetry that he writes in English is all profound religious meditation. In fact, many of his poems are set to music and sung, right, as hymns.
What do the students make of this poem?
So we read this poem, or memorize this poem, I should say, in the same semester that we memorize John Donne's Batter My Heart, which is another poem about a speaker's relationship to the divine. But in Batter My Heart, it's a relationship of violence, or at least the speaker is calling out to God to batter my heart, to says, break, blow, burn, and make me new. Right? Because he's so profoundly enslaved to sin that he needs the intensity and the violence of God. Whereas Love 3, the relationship between love and the soul is, as I've been saying, is this incredible, gracious, courteous, gentle hospitality. So it's really fun for the students to think through these very different depictions of love, a very different sort of dynamics between the soul, between the souls and divine love. And then we're also reading Love 3 in a semester in which we study Augustine, Boethius, and Dante, all three of whom are obsessed with love. And love of all kinds, but especially divine love. And so our meditations on those really rich and long texts inform our meditation on Love 3.
Simone Weil often recited Love 3. Quote, often at the culminating point of a violent headache, she wrote, I make myself say it over, concentrating all my attention upon it and clinging with all my soul to the tenderness it enshrines. It was during one of these recitations that Christ himself came down and took possession of me. Close quote. The power of poetry, and the power of poetry especially when committed to memory, has been lost on most of us today. If you want to get a sense of that power, George Herbert's Love 3 might be a great poem to memorize this summer in order to feast on the tenderness it enshrines. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.